Hey, this is Nico Robin from One Piece, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hello, and welcome to 4Panel. We're back once again for another week full of comic and manga-related vague ramblings. And possibly not even any manga-related vague ramblings this week.
No,
so
there isn't.
Already I've lied to you, audience. Don't believe anything I say. And on that note, I shall introduce myself. I'm Andrew. And as always, I'm joined by Rob.
Hello.
And Mick. You all remember Mick, right? He's been here since the very beginning.
Yes, and next week we'll be doing an extensive retro continuity to explain exactly how I got here.
Yes, I didn't even realise that's what I was doing. I've retconned you in.
Yes.
We really are a comic book show.
Yes, we are. Can I do your origin story? I was going to make you born from an egg on a mountaintop.
That's been done, surely.
Not in the Marvel Universe.
Is this your weird funky monkey thing again?
Yes, it is.
But which Marvel Universe? Because it could have happened in one of them.
It probably did happen in one of them. But then again, in one of them, the X-Men were made of blocks of cheese.
Those were the days.
I think my favourite alternate Marvel universe is just like a single panel where it's like, what if Wonder Man was a woman and Power Man was a girl? And it's just them getting handed a cease and desist letter from DC Comics.
Actually, that comic does exist. And the artist with a rare foray into the comic world was David Hockney, and the issue was called A Bigger Splash.
I did not know this.
Look it up on the internet.
I didn't realize that was an actual thing.
Yeah.
It's
where all the Marvel universes spontaneously are created and die simultaneously on one panel.
So, aside from melting, how are you two?
Well, I'm slowly counting down the days until Zack Snyder disappoints me by destroying yet another element of my childhood in a cinematic form. But up to that point, I am okay, happy, too hot, but happy.
Well, I don't think he is, according to what you said, Andrew.
No, apparently we don't have time to go into how I'm doing, but that's fine.
I'm sorry, fine. How are you? How are you, Andrew?
No, it's too late, Rob.
No, we're here for you, Andrew. You tell us.
Yes, you tell us.
It's been a traumatic day. One of my bathrooms is now completely unavailable because there's a wasp in it.
You see, that's Eagles Cliff for you. One of my bathrooms. it's a whole other universe.
Well, of course.
That's
Andrew. An upstairs and a downstairs bathroom. We're not savages.
That's Andrew, everybody, the Tony Stark of the Geek Show Network.
Oh, I wish. See, now I'm gone. Now I'm just imagining having an Iron Man. But, oh, God, can you imagine being Iron Man today?
I would imagine some kind of ventilation system would have been installed.
That's true. He probably has, like, the tiny spinny fans.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is probably why he spends so many frames in comics with slash marks down his face and on his arms. It's actually the blades from the fans inside the suit rather than any kind of combat injury.
Yep,
that makes complete sense, and so we're just going to move on quickly before anyone can think about it too long.
Which is, let's face it, what Marvel do.
Exactly. News time. So, first up, we have pretty tragic news. Basically, Zack Snyder has stepped down from the Justice League film because of a family tragedy. Apparently, his daughter seems like she's killed herself.
Oh.
So he's stepped down to help support his family in this time. No, obviously, on the show, we do like to rag on Zack Snyder quite a bit.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty horrible thing to have happen to anyone.
Yeah,
indeed.
But the second part of this story is that the person who's been brought in to replace him is Joss Whedon.
Yay! Well, not so much yay. Has DC stolen Joss Whedon?
I don't think anyone steals Joss Whedon. I think he just goes where he pleases, like a whimsical fairy.
Yeah.
Basically,
what's happened is, I think that Joss Whedon has been wandering around Hollywoodland and found a little bit of geekdom that was unattended for 10 minutes and thought, oh, I'll have some of that.
Are you saying Joss Whedon is a cat?
Yes. Yes, I am. I have photos.
He sits outside like, what was it?
Give me half an hour with Photoshop and I will have photos.
Yeah. What was that cinema in LA? You know, the Chinese cinema that they always do the premieres at? Does he sit outside the back, you know, where the kitchen is, just mewing at them?
Yeah.
To give them scraps, or scripts, I should say.
You give me some scraps and I'll give you a franchise.
No, it's scripts, not scraps.
No. The scraps are the scripts.
Ah, yes.
But yeah, so it's obviously it's a difficult time for Zach, but I think Joss will no doubt do an admirable job.
Well, he's got to say that, but he's basically coming more for just post-production stuff.
Yes. Have we any more news?
Yes, we do. We've got plenty more news. Actually, on the subject of directors leaving, live-action Justice League Dark project that they've got going on, the director for that, Doug Liman, has left the project over scheduling issues. He's apparently set to direct Lionsgate's Chaos Walking, which was recently greenlit, and apparently they clashed the project, so he's not going to be heading that up. So now they're looking for a horror director.
Hmm.
Which could work, because
I assume, like, just outside the room, out in the rain, Guillermo del Toro has just got, like, his face jammed up against the window, desperately pawing at it.
Either that or he's doing his best face jammed up against the window in a creepy horror pause.
Yeah.
Just to try and prove a point.
Yeah.
Look at me, I'm good at this.
He's actually climbing out of a pool of darkness in a corner in some studio exec's office.
No. They just wheel in this
team. We need a horror director for this film. The Guillermo del Toro just materializes from the ground.
No. There's a prop TV, and Guillermo del Toro just starts crawling out of it in the middle of the meeting.
Yes.
Also, I assume he has like a cape pulled over his face, like Bela Lugosi in Plan 9 from Outer Space.
If he doesn't, he should do. I reckon that's how Guillermo del Toro should introduce himself to everybody.
What, just maybe reveal himself from some kind of supernatural event happening around him?
I was thinking
basically what happens is someone turns to you and says, oh, you really should meet Guillermo. Say, okay, when does he get here? He's already behind you.
Yep.
Yes.
So, yeah, I would happily go see Justice League Dark if he was the person heading up the project.
Realistically, though, what do we think the chances are?
I would say none, because Hollywood apparently hates him.
Yeah, I know.
But everyone hates him, because Konami hates him as well.
Mm. Well, I guess we need to keep monitoring that one.
Yeah. Well, you never know. We might end up with... I just hope we don't end up with one of those B-movie directors, you know, the really bad ones.
Well, hold on. It's a DC movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Has it got a script?
Yeah.
It's got a script.
Screenplay is by Michael Grillo.
All right. Well, I've got 2 weeks leave left to take. That's usually what it takes to throw a DC movie together, isn't it?
Yeah, great. Just bash it out over the weekend.
Oh no, I don't want to do a Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe DC have turned a bit of a corner, because I've heard very, very good things about Wonder Woman.
Yes, I'm remaining cautiously optimistic based on the trailers I've seen, but
yeah.
Trailers have misled me before.
Oh yeah, we've been down this road.
Mm.
So many times.
Yes. But yeah, staying on the horror subject, you know the New Mutants, the X-Men spin-off?
Yes.
Not the other X-Men spin-off called The Gifted, was it? But the actual New Mutants. Apparently they're wanting to make it a full-fledged horror.
Is The New Mutants going to be a movie, or... Because The Gifted's a TV show, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So is The New Mutants a movie?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a movie.
Yeah.
Right, so it's not that easily confused, is my point.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're trying to do kind of a X-Men crossed with Stranger Things type job on it.
Okay.
And it's going to focus on the Demon Bear saga. By Chris Claremont and Bill Sienkiewicz.
A Demon Bear?
Yeah.
Where do I buy my tickets?
Yeah, I'm sold.
Yeah. Let me call up my cinema booking app.
Is it just you saying Stranger Things, or is Stranger Things something they've specifically mentioned in the article?
One of the articles I read about this said that it sounded like they were doing a bit of a Stranger Things thing because it was the Demon Bear saga. I'm not familiar with the Demon Bear saga. You've read The New Mutants before, haven't you, Andrew?
Not the original series.
Oh, right. Okay, you're right.
Because, I mean, the newer one was like basically like an 80s teen sitcom.
Yeah, I think
that's kind of what I assumed they were going for, but
yeah,
this sounds interesting. I can see the kind of John Hughes-y 80s plucky kids banding together thing.
Yeah.
That could work well.
Well, apparently the Demon Bear saga was a bunch of the students from Xavier School are isolated from their mentors and the world by a freak snowstorm and forced to overcome their differences to save themselves and their teammate Danielle Moonstar from a demonic bear that killed her parents.
Yeah, that kind of says Demon Bear, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally.
Bear, what is a demon?
Yeah.
So
we need to discuss whether there is a difference between demon bear and a demonic bear.
Yeah.
And are they both intrinsically different from a bear demon?
Well, yes, because that's not suitable for a family audience.
But it is suitable for a video game called Dante's Inferno. I'm sorry, that final fight scene, all I could think of at that point was Dr. Manhattan.
Look, I'm a middle-aged gamer. Like, I got to the final scene of Dante's Inferno.
This is true. At least you're not a modern gamer. You wouldn't even make it to the halfway point before you started complaining. Then put the game down and never return.
I've barely installed this game and I'm already disappointed with its graphical content.
Yes.
Press X to start. This is a clunky game system.
Yes. We need more side boob. I think that's a game of complaint,
isn't
it?
The number of NPCs that I can have casual and random sex with in this game. Please rewrite it.
So yeah,
said the latest reviews for Pac-Man.
Yeah. So yeah, New Mutants is going to be a horror.
Which, I like the idea, and I like that it's going to be different from what my main worry of this film was, that it was just going to be like X-Men, but different characters.
Yeah.
I think my main concern now is basically what Mick said a little while ago. It's going to be horror, but probably for like more of a family-friendly audience.
Yeah, but I don't know, because I think, I mean, my personal view is I got to the stage with the first run of X-Men movies where I'd booked my tickets to go see Logan, and it suddenly dawned on me that I couldn't. It wasn't that I hadn't watched the X-Men movies; it's just that I couldn't remember them.
Yeah. Most people I've spoken to are like that. They don't remember what happened in the original X-Men movies.
I don't remember.
I forget that the second X-Men movie wasn't just the original one. There was an X-Men 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, I can't remember which ones were McAvoy and Stewart, which ones were McKellen and Fassbender. So I found myself going, it wasn't even Logan, it was Apocalypse. It was like, have I seen the ones leading up to this? And then I watched them again, and I came out of Apocalypse, and I still couldn't remember watching any of them, including Apocalypse. I think there's some kind of hypnotic signal beamed through the screen as you watch the X-Men movies.
Are you saying either James McAvoy or Patrick Stewart is actually Charles Xavier?
No. I would never say such a thing about Patrick Stewart. James McAvoy, yeah. But Patrick Stewart, I certainly wouldn't level any kind of accusation at. What I'm saying is...
But not about James McAvoy.
I suspect that Sony are sending out a signal that makes you forget having watched the movie, thus forcing you to spend good money to watch it again.
Or they're employing the services of a powerful telepath.
Maybe it's a cost-saving measure.
Yeah. Or they're just employing the services of a powerful telepath.
They could be. It's just a theory. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, for the sake of legal action that may or may not be taken by certain multinational entertainment corporations, I am not saying that this is the case.
Yep.
I'm saying that hypothetically, it could be one reason why a lot of people seem to have a blind spot around their history of watching X-Men movies.
Yeah.
Or it could just be that they all feel like the same movie.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I knocked my mic stand.
On the subject of the New Mutants, I'd say it doesn't sound so much Stranger
Things.
Oh, so
wait a minute.
Yeah?
It's Fox that does the X-Men films.
Yes, it is.
Is it Fox?
Yeah.
Ah, Fox, Sony, they're all evil.
Sure, you haven't just been walking into the Spider-Man films by mistake.
No, because I have done that.
No, because he would remember one particular thing from Spider-Man 3, because one scene, never forgotten, the dancing.
You see, I had forgotten. After years of training,
You needed training to forget it.
But now you've brought it all flooding back. Where do I send the invoice from my therapist?
Andrew can deal with it.
It's fine. You signed the waiver before the show started. You know that any
what waiver
occurred is your own fault.
What waiver?
It was the conversation we had yesterday.
Get the psychic, make him think he signed the waiver.
Have you been using Fox technology against me?
Yes.
Oh.
Anyway, as I was saying, New Mutants. I'm more worried it's going to be a crossover with the Revenant than Stranger Things, which means there's going to be lots of beautiful shots of landscape and sex with a bear.
Okay, I don't really know how to follow that.
What would you do in this situation? Just shake our heads and walk away from Rob?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm beginning to see now why this is recorded in the way that it is.
Anyway, moving on from there.
Yes.
Disney's Guardians of the Galaxy ride called Mission Breakout apparently is offering clues as to the possible addition of Nemo and Beta Ray Bill to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right. Now, in reference to the former, I was reading an article on the interweb, which I understand is a tool you young people use, that led to the fact that there were some subtle clues in areas on nowhere in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume that also hinted at possible Submariner exploits in future movies.
Yeah.
So could we be facing a summer in the near future where we have an Aquaman Submariner face-off at the box office?
Possibly, but I'm more interested in Beta Ray Bill because I've always been a big fan of Beta Ray Bill. I love that guy. His horse face and everything.
Yeah, you see, I was deliberately avoiding that subject because that's probably in my comic book gap, in my gap years.
You had a comic book gap, yeah?
So just neither of you going to say what the clues are?
Well,
that would need a memory.
According to what people have seen, on the Mission Breakout ride, there are these apparently Atlantean artifacts, and another one of the artifacts is an Asgardian Warhammer, which is, well, it looks remarkably like the Warhammer that Odin gave to Beta Ray Bill, only silver instead of gold.
I'm confused by the Atlantean artifacts. Is there like some kind of Marvel archaeologist on these rides who goes, why, that vase looks like it's from the Atlantean period?
Hmm.
Or is it literally there's kind of an urn with a decorative fish on the top of it?
Well, the Atlantean artifacts are listed as mysterious artifacts found at the bottom of the Terran Ocean. Very little is known of the civilization that created them. And the Asgardian Warhammer does look a lot like Stormbreaker. It's, according to the description, originated in the Dwarven Forge on Nidavellir. This finely crafted object is made of the powerful stone Uru.
Mm.
I mean, to be fair, Beta Ray Bill is like a big part of the Thor mythos, so I can see him showing up at some time.
Yeah.
Namor, I'm slightly sceptical about, because that would require some finagling with Fox.
Yeah. And do Fox own the rights to Namor?
I think so, because they own the rights to Fantastic Four.
That
and
doesn't...
I think Namor is included in that.
Oh, I don't know, but...
That's always been the thing I've been curious about. It's like, how do they decide that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like saying just because they own Fantastic Four, they automatically own Doctor Doom, but Doctor Doom just happens to have tussled the most with Fantastic Four, but he's been a thorn in quite a lot of other heroes' sides.
Yeah, it's one that could... it could very easily be an entire almost sub-series of podcasts in its own right, the protracted and complicated rights issues with Marvel characters.
Yeah.
But especially given the way that they tend to cross over, in the comics anyway, between one superhero team and another, I think all we could do is just wait and see.
Yeah.
That's a fair and reasonable response, and so I immediately reject it.
Ah, I see. In that case,
now instead.
In that case, we should start a petition immediately.
Yes, I demand that Marvel either do or do not include Submariner in one of their future films.
Or retcon him into one of their past films. Let's not rule out all the possibilities.
Yeah, true. I've got a question, right? I basically saw the preview of the variant cover for, for Jean Grey.
Mm-hmm.
When did Namor host the Phoenix Force?
Oh, I know the answer to that. Which I say, like, that's not something I should be deeply ashamed of. Because Do you remember a while ago they did Avengers versus X-Men?
Yes.
Basically, a bunch of the X-Men got a little bit of the Phoenix Force, and Namor was one of them. There's also Namor was in the X-Men for a while.
But he's not a mutant, is he?
Yes, he is.
Is he?
Yes.
Apparently.
Yes, apparently so.
When did that happen?
When it suited the plot.
Because I'm looking at this cover, I'm going, when did Cyclops have the Phoenix Force? When did Colossus have the Phoenix Force? When the hell did Namor have the Phoenix Force?
Yeah, I think that's it. It was Cyclops, Colossus, Emma Frost, Magic, and Namor.
Okay.
Yes, he was the mutant son of a human seafarer and an Atlantean princess.
Wow, what an incredibly original origin story.
Yes, it doesn't sound anything like Aquaman.
I've got a question. How does that make him a mutant? Just being the son of a human and an Atlantean?
No. The specific quote is, the mutant son of a human sea captain. Doesn't say that the fact that he's a human and she's an Atlantean makes him a mutant. It just says that he is a mutant son.
Okay.
It's a subtle distinction, I'll give you that.
Yeah, I know. It's really confusing me.
Unless those weird wing things on his feet are a mutation.
Yeah.
I don't recall the other Atlanteans having that.
Thing is, if that is...
I checked, humans didn't have those either.
If that is a mutation, then it's a very Waterworld mutation.
Yeah.
It's also really... It's only striking me now how really, really weird it is that he just has tiny wings on his feet.
Yeah, particularly as you wouldn't really associate wings with creatures of the sea.
Maybe he's just drank a lot of Red Bull?
I'm not buying it.
Does that mean just, like, fly feet first everywhere?
Yeah, but you see, this is the thing.
Hang on.
Why would he fly everywhere when he lives underwater?
Oh my God, I know the truth about Namor. In an alternate reality, and Namor has been transported to the Marvel Universe in order to hide his existence from the old Greek gods, because Hermes, who actually has wings on his feet because he runs so fast, right? He got jiggy with Poseidon's wife, right? Which is why he's part, why Namor is part Atlantean, but it also explains the wings on his feet as well, and why he can fly.
Well, to be fair, it makes
sense. And why do the wings on Hermes' feet make him run fast? This is a whole can of worms we've opened.
You see, continuity has been a problem even back in ancient Greek times.
Yeah, but then again, you had Zeus going around getting women pregnant by just being a gust of wind. Or a swan.
Now, you see, I can understand that.
Well, have you done the same? Degree. Have you done Unless, the same, Mick?
No, just put yourself in the mindset of a less enlightened time where science wasn't quite as popular and facts weren't as numerous as they are now. And you find yourself as a young maiden in ancient Greece having to explain to your dad why you are with child.
Zeus
could come up with any number of excuses. Oh, yeah, it was Zeus. There was this gust of wind that looked exactly like Zeus. What's a girl to do?
See, if you said that in a more Cockney accent, then it could be a bit from EastEnders.
It was a gust of wind, mate. There I was, just minding my own business.
Now you
this
sound
gust
like,
of wind came along.
Now you sound like Danny Dyer. And just imagining Danny Dyer saying that Zeus got him pregnant. My mind is slowly rebelling and melting.
Bloody Zeus, without so much as a boy, you bloody Lee.
Okay, but I think we're getting away from the real issue here.
Oh?
And that is, does Angel have tiny fish scales on his feet?
Are you suggesting that Namor and Angel could be related in some way?
Swapped at birth. I like Andrew's misguided concept that there was a point. I think it shows a naivety that's quite endearing.
No, I think Andrew's
there's
just...
always a point.
Yeah.
Not necessarily anywhere like vaguely resembling where we started.
Yes.
There is a point out there somewhere.
It's not the destination, it's the journey that counts.
Yes. On that note, we'll take a break and we'll be back with some comics.
This is Judge Dredd. In case some people have forgotten, this block operates under the same rules as the rest of the city. Mama's not the law. I am the law.
Thanks for listening. We hope you're enjoying the show. Now, at the Geek Show Network, we're a voluntary network, so we need all the help we can get. Now, if you want to donate any money you can, head on over to thegeekshow.co.uk and click on the donate button. However much or little you can donate, we'd be massively appreciative. Thanks.
Hey everybody, this is Quentin Flynn, and you are tuned in to The Geek Show. It rocks. You roll. Got it memorized?
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
Welcome back, and now it's time for comics, starting with Andrew.
Yeah, so first thing that I've got today is issue one of Rocket, which is Marvel's new Rocket Raccoon series.
No Groot?
Nope, no Groot, just Rocket by himself this time. And kind of, this is something I wanted to bring up, because last week you talked about Royals.
Yes.
And I said that Al Ewing did good stuff, and this is some of the good stuff he does.
Okay, because Royals wasn't.
Tell us more.
Do I have to?
But you said it was good.
I've come with the basic points. It's got Rocket Raccoon, it's good.
Well, just pretend for a moment that we're not dedicated followers of comic book fandom. Give us a little taste. Tempt us into the world of Rocket Raccoon.
I'm not a dedicated follower of furry.
I never said that.
That is a strangely specific denial, Rob.
It is. It's one of those, methinks the man doth protest too much moments.
No, I don't. He says, hoping they didn't notice that slip.
Anyway, Andrew, tell us more about Rocket Raccoon.
Okay, so Rocket Raccoon, he is the raccoony member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. But when he's not guarding the galaxy, this is what he does on his downtime. So the issue starts. Is he some kind of heist that has gone horribly wrong? You've got a vault exploding and Rocket diving out with two laser guns in his hand. And then we flash back to a few weeks earlier, where Rocket is in a bar in space, getting drunk like what he likes to do, when he's approached by his old flame, the femme fatale. I can't say words anymore because my tongue has actually melted into my face.
And that's the searing temperatures we're facing at the moment, listeners.
It is harsh working conditions. He is approached by Otter, who is an otter. Did you catch the subtle word?
There's a
O-T-T-A. But that's almost like Otter, like the animal, which is the animal that she is.
And she's Rocket's old flame.
Yep, the one who first convinced him to get into a life of crime. Which, also, something I like about this series is it finally sort of retcons how there are two very different Rocket Raccoons. Because if you go all the way back to, like, the 70s, I think.
Yeah.
What, when there was the first Rocket Raccoon, he was very different to the more movie-inspired, kind of criminal-esque one that we've got now.
Wasn't he more of a kind of, a law-abiding citizen at that
point? Yeah, I think it was basically like Buck Rogers, but a raccoon.
See, now I've got some weird fanfic where Rocket is like a 1920s...
Oh, no, Rob, I don't want to know about your furry fanfic.
No, Rocket is like a 1920s detective, you know, in his office, and then Otto walks in, and then his life goes haywire, and he has to turn to a life of crime, you know, to make ends meet.
I'm almost certain that at some point in the past, there's been a small limited-run series called Rocket Noir, where that happened.
I mean, that's basically what this comic is it's Rocket Noir.
And so that's why he's so pally-pally with Howard the Duck, because he's trying to keep Howard the Duck from going down the same route he did.
Now you see, I'm worried now, because, you know, I'm not a prude, okay? Live and let live, that's what I say. But ducks and otters and raccoons, it's not right. It's just not right. There's something inherently wrong in someone's mind there. That's it. That's my piece. I'm just putting it out there. Carry on.
Was that your 1950s dad impression?
God, it's Look. The 21st century, you dad. Animals can sleep with whoever they want.
I've got a correct
mouse wants to get jiggy with a manatee. Who are we to judge?
I think what you'll find is that biology is to judge in that particular instance.
Well, then biology is sexist.
And you heard it here first, folks.
And speciesist.
But, you know, I'm glad we can finally be the show to call biology out on its crude, regressive practices.
Dealing with the issues that matter.
Yes.
Oh. I was talking about Rocket Raccoon, wasn't I?
Yes, you were.
Vaguely.
So, needless to say, Rocket gets pulled into pulling one last job, and that is to break into a bank vault to steal a deed to some land that basically Otter's people's home is on and is going to get destroyed. So to do that, he needs a gang. And in something that probably I and no one else on the planet will appreciate, he recruits the TechNet, a bunch of weird alien mercenaries who showed up like a couple of times in the 80s in the Captain Britain series.
Hang on, I think I remember these guys.
I thought TechNet was the website I used to go to when my Microsoft drivers screwed my computer up.
So anyway, the members of Alta Vista include China Doll, who's like a blue snake woman who can shrink things, Scatterbrain, who is a green alien who can kind of do mind control stuff, Numbers, who is a giant turtle man who is the brain, Pharaoh 2, who's like a basically discount Sabretooth, and the Egg.
See, you know, when you said Numbers, I started remembering, you know, that TV series Numbers. So I thought Numbers was going to be some vaguely Jewish-looking guy with a perm.
I'm slightly concerned, Andrew, because you went through that roster of characters and you gave us a little bit of background on each one. You know, Numbers, the Turtle Man, the Snake Woman, and who can shrink things. And then you just went, and the Egg.
Yes, the Egg.
With nothing.
So cut off. As we later learn. Anyway, long story short, the Egg contains Hardboiled Huey, who is a chicken that explodes.
Okay.
I think I'm liking this series. Basically, the idea is we've kind of got text boxes running down the side of each page, which like narrate everything that's going on in this really dry 1920s PI monologue style. Meanwhile, on the other page, you've got a tiny chicken bursting out of an egg and exploding.
I like it.
Yeah, I'll be heading off to get issue one of that right away.
It sounds really good. It sounds a hell of a lot better than Deadpool the Duck.
Oh, that's a thing that exists. Which, to explain, Mick, when a Deadpool and a Howard the Duck love each other very much, sometimes they create an abomination that absolutely proves your point that, no, animals shouldn't be allowed to mix outside their race.
Yeah, it was a weird cosmic event.
Well, certainly for one of Deadpool or Howard, I'm sure it was.
It was caused by a teleporter.
Often the way.
Yeah, I know.
Is that like the modern age equivalent of a gust of wind did it?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was the teleporter's fault.
It was the teleporter's fault, yeah.
We kind of got combined mid-transit. Is it my turn then?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm heading over to DC for Superwoman, or Superwoman's, or is it Superwoman? I'm confused. All right, this is part of Rebirth, and the story starts off right after the whole supposed death, petrification, whatever, catastrophic explosion of Superman, which wasn't actually the death of Superman, even though he died, because there was another Superman from an alternate reality living in living in that world with Lois Lane and their son. And because Lois Lane of that world and Lana Lang of that world were with Superman when he went kind of supernova, they inherited part of his powers and also got changed on a genetic level. So, story starts off a short while after.
I don't think I listened to a single thing. You start talking, then it all just faded to white noise.
Yep, the story starts off a little bit after the supposed death of Superman. And Metropolis has a new hero called Superwoman. And Superwoman is basically Lois Lane, who has taken on the mantle of Superwoman in order to honor Clark Kent, or Superman, and basically take his place. Meanwhile, Lex Luthor has also decided to take on the mantle of Superman using a powered suit, kind of Iron Man style, but without the helmet. And he's basically giving his press conferences and talking about how he's going to protect the planet from this and that. He's got his new battleships, new weapons, and all sorts of stuff. Only for him to be showing off a new kind of shield-type weapon, flying battleship-type thing, which happens to be in the ocean at that point. And for things to go a bit haywire, because somebody has been messing with his tech and has powered down his suit. Superwoman turns up, as in Lois Lane, and says to Lana, who is on the scene filming everything, I need you to help out. So she becomes the other Superwoman, who, well, Lois Lane is blue and red, she is white and red, and has, like, energy-based powers. So she's like the red version of, you remember when Superman went through that whole electricity-energy phase, where he was like blue Superman?
And that universally beloved story.
Yeah, she's like that version of Superman, only can become, like, you know, solid. And Lana at that point has a thing going on with John Henry Irons, who is still Steel, and they have a little cadre of superhero type people who kind of street level, but not. They're a bit too overpowered for street level, but they're still street level. Not really following that. Anyway, Lois Lane, she gets wasted right at the end of the first issue. And I'm not spoiling things because this is all the first issue and it's 10 issues in. There's a lot more to it than that, right? She gets wasted at the end of the first issue. So I'm thinking, hang on, what the hell's going on? So she finally understands what Clark understood, but you're not going to tell us because DC are trying to troll us in the same way that Marvel are. So I'm still curious as to what all makes sense now to Clark Kent and Lois Lane. But I'm not going to find the answer because it turns out the person who's been trolling the person who's been trolling Lex Luthor is his sister. When did Lex Luthor get a sister?
Oh, well, if like me, you are a follower of the CW's DC-related shows.
Yeah.
Lena Luthor is the adopted daughter of the Luthor family and who took over LexCorp after Superman sent, to use the vernacular, Lex Dan.
This isn't that version of Lena Luthor. This is like the blood-related sister of Lex Luthor, who was crippled as a child due to stupid experiments that him and his sister were running on themselves as children. And she has been pretty much imprisoned for the past however many decades by Lex Luthor.
Experiments like the, I bet if I jump off this roof, I can make it into a bush type experiment.
No, doing experiments like, what happens if I inject myself with this combination of chemicals?
Who didn't do that as a kid?
Lots of us.
I mean, I think what you're describing is 17-year-old basic night out.
The weird thing is, what kills Lois Lane in this, what basically kills that version of Lois Lane anyway, the Superwoman version of Lois Lane, is a female Bizarro-type character. I'm thinking, I'm not sure what's going on, and it gets
pretty strange.
Yeah, the thing is, it gets more confusing from there, and I think that what's happened with Superwoman is that, I mean, because it's written by Phil Jimenez, and I think what's happened is that they've tried to cram loads and loads of ideas into Superwoman to try and get some kind of new series off the ground, a new franchise off the ground. So they've just been crowbarring in all of these ideas, and it's just not working because it's too much. You know, sometimes what you need for a new franchise to just kick off is literally just keep it simple.
Yeah. So as you were reeling through the various ideas that have been crowbarred in there, I was hearing a lot of stuff that's sort of a filtered down version of what's happening in the CW universe. So yes, I spent the first part of this season of Supergirl going, Lex Luthor has a sister?
Yeah. I mean, is Lex Luthor's sister in the CW universe, is she a floating head on a suit of armor?
No, she's Morgana from Merlin.
Oh, right. Okay. Because in this, she ends up as a floating head on a suit of armor.
Right. Yeah, no, she's not got there yet.
Controlling a bunch of female characters who look like, Bizarro's ex-girlfriends from Bizarro's own world.
Okay. Yeah, no, she's a bit more... She sort of comes across as being the anti-Lex in the CW.
Yeah.
Also, objection!
Yeah.
Bizarro's ex-girlfriends are his current girlfriends.
Yes, Bizarro's
That's
current
Bizarro
girlfriends.
That's how Bizarro logic works.
Yeah, Bizarro's current girlfriends from worlds that aren't Bizarro, that aren't Bizarro's own world. That works.
So which are Bizarro's own world, then?
Yeah, ex-girlfriends from Bizarro's own world.
See, the thing is, listeners, it's like how in Bizarro speak, you would say Superwoman has a plot that makes complete and utter sense.
I've just realised Bizarro is... Oh, God, no. Not going there. I've just realised that if I say it, it could get us into trouble.
So we'll leave that there. So one of the other ideas that you mentioned there was around this cadre of heroes that are not superpowered, but more than street level.
Well, John Henry Irons is Steel, and apparently he's a meta-human now, not a guy who simply, you know, was kind of a ghetto version of Tony Stark, and I mean that quite literally.
Yeah, so again, that's kind of tying
it
with
It is a step
legends.
Up from being Shaquille O'Neal.
True, true, true.
Again, that's kind of come down from Legends of Tomorrow, as has the street level cadre of heroes that aren't actually superheroes. They're because Arrow's got that now in the CW. So it looks like they're sort of trying to crowbar some ideas from the TV universe into the comics. And
they are. I mean,
making a bit of a mesh of it by the sound of it.
One of the heroes that's in their cadre is Steel's, I think it's his daughter. And it's his daughter or his niece, one or the other. I can't remember which one it is. And her girlfriend. They're part of this little cadre of street-level type heroes. And Lana doesn't... the thing is, this series actually got some things right. One of them was Lana's... inability to cope with her powers and the responsibility of being that person, being the one who stands in front of everybody else, being the one who takes the bullet kind of thing.
Yeah.
She's not like Lois, where Lois always had those kind of stars in her eyes, which is why she became a reporter, you know?
Yeah.
And she's not like Clark, who grew up, you know, she grew up on the farm, but she was never different. She never grew up knowing that she was different. So she's suddenly got these powers and these abilities, and she is really, that's the bit that really makes this stand out, is Lana struggling to actually be responsible, to actually take on the responsibility, and struggling with the death of Clark and the death of Lois at the same time, because she actually saw Lois die, and she saw Clark die. And one of her fears is she's going to go the same way, because she's got all the same symptoms that Lois had and that Clark had before they both kick the bucket. So that's the bit that makes this series good. But aside from that, it's just too many ideas. If they kept it that simple, you know, just Lana struggling to cope, it would have been interesting.
And this seems symptomatic of stuff we were discussing earlier. I mean, you know, we all made jibes about recent DC movies. So Batman versus Superman, Suicide Squad, both stories that had too much going on.
Yeah.
To leave you with a dissatisfied feeling ultimately at the end of the day. And I think sometimes some of these writers need an editor who's willing to go around and say, "Whoa, fanboy, rein it in."
Also, sometimes I don't know if it's the fault. It might even be the other way around. Because I know there's a big move now towards kind of line-wide events, which can lead to them having to shove in stuff that's going to set up other things for like a larger story, just like the DC Universe movies do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is true.
So a lot of this seems like the equivalent of having Wonder Woman literally just watch the trailers for the Flash and Cyborg movies.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think, and this is, and don't get me started on the crossover events that both the big boys are guilty of doing. It's not necessary. Sometimes ideas can be too big, and sometimes ideas aren't as big as you think they are, and you end up with a hell of a lot of padding just to try and justify the idea that you've had to spread it across that number of issues and that number of titles.
And other times Captain America is a Nazi.
Yes.
That's true. But then, to be fair, Steve Rogers does bear a stronger resemblance to the Aryan idea of perfection than the man who came up with the Aryan idea of perfection.
The man has a point.
Which I'm pretty sure that was like kind of part of the point of Captain America.
True.
I seem to remember reading something about them deliberately making him Aryan, kind of just as a bit of a middle finger to Hitler.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Okay, who's next?
Well, I guess that'll be me, and I'm going to take you on a journey back in time, because my current reading is from Rebellion Comics' ongoing Judge Dredd retrospective, the Judge Dredd Mecha Collection, and I am currently reading Banzai Battalion. Which, it has to be said, that the whole of the 2000 AD Megacity universe should be used as a Bible by Marvel and DC as a way of coming up with new ideas, but without creating a separate universe to explore them in.
Do you know who doesn't need to read from that handbook?
Who?
Eric Larson.
Okay.
Because he does the Savage Dragon. Never been rebooted. Just one continuous story.
Yeah. And the thing about... When you bear in mind that the Judge Dredd universe is just set in our world in the future.
Yep.
You know, and initially, in the very early years, very rarely set foot outside of Mega City 1, which was just a huge futuristic city on the edge of America there. But when we wanted to show a Western-style story, We went out into the cursed earth.
Yeah.
And the frontier land. We went out into Britsit and Calhab and explored how the apocalypse that led to Mega City 1 being formed had affected the rest of the world. So we go over to Japan and visit Hondosit. We go to Indonesia and visit Sinosit. To tell different stories, they just created new locations in an existing universe.
Yeah.
And it works. And the ideas that don't work, you don't revisit. The ideas that do work, you stick with them, you revisit them, and you play them out until they're done. And Banzai Battalion is one of those stories where someone obviously thought, we want to do something new in Mega City 1. We still want to include Judge Dredd, so it's got to be in Mega City 1. So Banzai Battalion is clearly a play on words, but unfortunately, in this instance, they've got the wrong word, because what it should actually be called is Bonzai Battalion. Right. And the Banzai Battalion are droids, miniature droids that you can buy from a hardware shop to control your garden pests.
Oh my God. 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 No.
What?
There was a... Andrew's got... Andrew, second time this year. Mark the calendar. Reset the clock.
Oh, no. No, Rob. No, you promised it was over, Rob. No. No. Don't do it, Rob. Don't do it to
me. This reminds me of an anime, but... Reset the clock, Andrew.
Back to 0 days without incident.
Right. But the thing is, Banzai Battalion is actually quite an old bit in 2000 AD, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I said I was going to take you on a journey back through time.
See, the thing is, there's a little anime OVA, a little kind of one-off episode, based on a little robot character, a cute little robot maid. She's only like the size of an action man, and she's got like weapons. And her job, she's called Hoi Hoi-san. And her job is to basically patrol the house at night, taking out cockroaches and other creepy crawly insects like that, right?
Yeah.
And she's armed to the teeth. She's got, like, little rocket launchers and, little submachine guns and assault rifles. And enemy, rival robots from other companies, they're all kind of cute little characters as well. But they're forever trying to take each other out, take out the competition. So they're sneaking into other people's houses and taking out their robots as well. So there's a war going on, a kind of a three-way war between these two companies that make these robots and the robots and the insects. And I could never figure out why that reminded me of something, and you just cleared it up. Because it's not so much that Banzai Battalion reminds me of an anime, it's that that anime reminded me of Banzai Battalion, and I'd forgotten why the idea for Hoi Hoi-san sounded so familiar.
I'm glad I've filled that gap in your memory. 1999 was the first appearance of the Banzai Battalion.
Yeah, long before Hoi Hoi-san.
Do you want to know a fun fact?
What?
I was 8 in that year.
And that's been a revelation to me, because I now know that Andrew's idea of fun is very different to mine.
See, I think what you're not appreciating is the fact that you're both very old and I'm not.
I think...
Mick's older than me.
Oh, thanks. There goes the solidarity, brother. Jeez.
I learned from Andrew. As soon as you can, sell him down the river.
So, when I used to read 2000 AD by candlelight, and the year that it depicted was many centuries hence, Banzai Battalion, looking at the credits for the collection of Banzai Battalion stories, it reads like a who's who. Of comicdom, with writers like John Wagner, Alan Grant, Garth Ennis, artists like Steve Dillon. And they're just nice little stories, and the way that they interact with the judges and the humans that they work for, because they have a very set mission plan, which is to destroy garden pests. But occasionally their bosses, who give them their orders and essentially their reason for being, come under fire from the ne'er-do-wells of Mega City 1. And they want to act, but it contravenes their standing orders. So you get nice little pieces where suddenly Judge Dredd summarily reclassifies a villain as being a garden pest, and he suddenly has an army of tiny robots setting fire to his trousers and stabbing him in the ankles.
See, I like
and
that.
They're just a nice little oasis of lightheartedness in the what can be quite a dark universe.
Because Mega City 1 is kind of bleak.
It is bleak. And there are a few light-hearted characters that recur throughout it, and Banzai Battalion are just one. And I would highly recommend that anyone who has tried Mega City 1's fare and found it to be bleak and disturbing, maybe give the Banzai Battalion a go.
Right. So
in the words of the Immortal Bard, when shall we three meet again?
When the hurly-burly's done.
Ah!
When the battle's lost and won.
Touché.
You can find us online and on the iTunes.
Yes. And if
the show
you
are, is over now.
Yeah, if you, are, if you are listening on iTunes, subscribe to us. You can keep up to date with all of our shows. We are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, so there's more on there than you think. There's more in there to enjoy. All right,
so what have we learned today?
I learned that Banzai Battalion is the reason why Hoi Hoi San sounded so familiar, and I am happy about that because I'm going to go read Banzai Battalion as soon as I can.
And as always, I've willfully learned nothing.
And I've learned that if I'm going to explore the world of Superwoman, Woman's, Women, whatever it was,
well, the thing is,
I need to wait until the Brody's case notes come out.
Yes, because it says Superwoman, and then it has the Superman logo on the end of the word. So I don't know whether it's supposed to be Superwoman's or Superwoman.
Maybe we'll leave it to our listeners to decide.
Yes. So anyway, that's your lot for this week. We'll be back next time with more comics, hopefully some graphic novels, if I can get them out to you guys. All of our shows are available on iTunes and Audioboom. And if you are listening through either of those services, then do subscribe. We are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, so there's a lot more for you to explore. We have shows like Cinema Eclectica, which is all about movies, but not as good as us. We have shows like Press X, which is all about video games, but not as good as us. And we have shows like...
I mean, the show is basically all about movies and video games anyway.
Yeah, and we have shows like Literary Loitering, which is just as good as us, isn't it, Andrew?
Yes, it is equally as amazing as this show is.
Yes. So, until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.